Welcome back to the Walby commentary. To synchronize this commentary with your DVD, go to the part where the Axiom Bay door is closing, and once it's completely closed, pause it there, and when I say play, click play. Okay. 3, 2, 1, play.
See, suddenly we're introduced into such a different world, aren't we, really? Into a world with so many different robots when we've only just seen two so far.
We are. Such a very stark transition from going from a world of nothingness to a world where everything is alive and much more active, of course, than the world Wally came from. Very, very stark contrast. For a lot of these robots in WALL-E, some of the Pixar animators created a specific system where they had different, what they called, Lego pieces of robots. So they'd make different parts of robots and they'd stick them together, or they'd kind of mix and match robot parts, and then you get a lot of the little characters that you see in the film.
That's cool. This has been my favorite moment in the entire film.
It's really cute. I love it.
And you also notice that the robots that are meant to present some kind of authority, or are meant to be kind of the, not the villains, but the kind of the opposition, are the ones that seem to have less humanistic features?
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
Because even like Mo, for example, obviously he's not against WALL-E, but at first he obviously wants to kill him a lot, but...
Right.
Even he has more of a head and a body. But when
he does, he has way more personality.
See, what's quite interesting is that we're not told exactly what's going on as well. I mean, I guess there's an assumption that the plant's important, but we don't really know about exactly what it means until later on. And I think it was quite daring of Pixar to present a film in a way that, you know, not everything is completely obvious first time round, and you have to think about things a bit.
That's true. It was very, yeah, you're right. It's very daring, and you have to really pay attention to what's going on. But I do like how they take risks, and they're not afraid to do what most people wouldn't dare to do for any film, let alone an animated one. Although the only problem I really had with WALL-E when I first saw it was because of this fact that most of the film is pantomime. They're required to pull off what's difficult to do when you're not communicating orally. So certain shots, I just didn't get it the first time around. Like that shot back there with Mo when he jumps off of his line. I just didn't know what the heck was going on until maybe fifth or sixth time I saw the movie. That was the only problem I really had with it, where there were certain scenes where I didn't really understand what the meaning was behind them.
I think it's quite interesting in the making of the commentary or the making of the film, where they show how they had ideas of the humans not really being humans, but more sort of blobs and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I'm quite pleased they stuck to the human basics.
I have too, because they were like blobs of jello before, weren't they?
I think that they used the models of those blobs in Lifted for the aliens, or at least Mr. B.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that.
I haven't thought about that. Sigourney Weaver, just speaking now. She's obviously from... I mean, I always think of her as being an alien, but I think there's another film that this is referencing. Not sure which one.
Yeah, I always thought of Alien 2. I didn't know he was referencing some other film. But...
I think there was one other film where she was actually a voiceover for a spaceship, just like in Wall-E. But I really can't remember the name of the film, which didn't very helpful.
Oh, really? Does Andrew Stanton mention it at all in the commentary? Because I don't remember that.
I'm not sure if it's in the commentary. I'm not sure where I found this out from, really, but...
I'll have to look that up.
You'd think she'd be sort of slightly more shocked, in a way, seeing a robot like that, like Wall-E, but I guess she just seems sort of slightly straight, you know, weirded out by...
I guess so, probably because there's so many robots in the ship, she just takes it for granted, perhaps.
I have to say, out of all the characters in the film, Auto has to be my favourite. I know it's quite strange in comparison to, you know, you've got Eve and Wall-E and Mo and so many other really sort of captivating characters. But there's something about the way Auto represents, I guess, the bad side, the dark side, always following your orders. I guess his programming might be more rigid, or that there's some reason for him not wanting to, you know, diverge from his orders. But I kind of feel sorry for him because of that.
No, I agree with you. His personality is, you know, just as interesting as any of the other characters, including his background, and even the way he's designed is very, very neat and appealing. You're not alone, because my sister loves him too.
It's his voice as well. I love that deep voice.
Yeah, isn't that the Macintosh, one of the Macintosh default voices?
Yeah. How incredible is that? They're playing a piece of music that must be, well, in their terms, very, very, very old.
I probably don't even know what it is.
Yeah, probably. I guess humans haven't really changed. They still need coffee to wake up in the morning. By the way, the captain has his jacket draped around him, as opposed to actually wearing it, because he's rather large. I guess maybe that's probably the original jacket from the original captain, perhaps. Maybe. Because I can't see how they'd make new clothes on board the Axiom.
It might have been. Although they must have had to make their own apparel, or have robots that make apparel at some point, though, during their existence in the Axiom, because you know, when you see the collage of pictures in the background in the captain's office of all the previous captains who have taken care of the Axiom in the past, each captain becomes more and more hefty, is it word? So I suppose they needed new clothes, you know.
Yeah.
So they probably had to have some kind of a tailor robot somewhere in the ship.
Pixar obviously uses live action in the film. It's quite interesting, really, because obviously it's the first. I mean, it's one of the few animated films out there that have both animated and live action, and obviously it's the first Pixar film to include live action. Something that a lot of people weren't perhaps happy with at first, but I think it does fit in the film.
It does. I was a little skeptical of it at first, but it seemed to work. They didn't overdo it to the point where it was annoying.
No. Yeah.
The concept of BNL was devised by one of the artists at Pixar, Teddy Newton, I believe it was.
I never understood this, really, either. Why would Wally see Eve in that kind of way? Why would it be all kind of nonsensical?
I think he was in kind of a dream state. He was so captivated by her beauty or something that he saw her in that light.
I love how Otto is really all-knowing, isn't he? He knows that the books, well, the operation manual is actually a book. He knows everything, and I guess that shows, you know, knowledge is power.
That's true. It also shows how, not really creepy, but, authoritative, I suppose is the word Otto is. He knows so much that, to the point where he becomes a threat later on in the film. To the point where he actually even devises a plan to get rid of the plant. Although that was his orders, wasn't it?
That's the moment that really shows how human Wally is and how unhuman the captain is in a way. He doesn't really understand the idea of, you know, greeting a robot like that. Why would you do something like that? It's quite sort of new and strange to him.
Yeah, good point.
that shot really shows just how big the Axiom is. It's massive, isn't it?
It is. Kind of has to be to hold those people. Considering all the shots that you see in WALL-E, all the sequences here, there's a behind-the-scenes documentary feature titled Life of a Shot, Reconstructing the Pixar Process. And one of the artists at Pixar mentioned that there are 1,500 shots in WALL-E, possibly more than that. Yeah, so they had hundreds of people, or at least 800 or less, working on just one shot even. They had lighters, renderers, people doing, creating little things that you see in the background. And it was mentioned during that documentary feature that if one talented artist did all the work and all the shots, and WALL-E in particular, it would take them 442 years to complete the film.
Wow. Eve almost seems sort of insulted that, you know, I'm not broken. You know, that kind of, I would never be broken. I'm amazing. So
that's, I know, that's I love kind the concept of face that. That
has. Also, it took me sort of a second or third viewing to really understand what WALL-E's problem was. He actually obviously sees that Eve's being hurt, but, you know, his viewpoint. I never really got that until later on.
I didn't get it either the first time I saw it, possibly because I wasn't looking at the wrong, I was looking in the wrong places, perhaps. Just to show how difficult it is to make a pantomime-based film, you have to devise everything just right so people know exactly what you're talking about.
Also, the slow motion always makes me laugh. Seems kind of pointless, but in a really funny way.
Love how she slowly gets mad like that.
But everything WALL-E does seems to have some kind of positive outcome in the end anyway, really, so he's just sort of a lucky kind of guy.
Yeah.
I guess that's one of the things humans would have to be wary of, really. I mean, the idea of robots being so intelligent that they can do things for themselves. I can't remember who devised those laws about how robots can't harm humans. But I guess there was always that worry that they might kind of turn on their creators.
Kind of like an iRobot, I guess. Did you ever see that film? It had the same basic concept where the robots were programmed.
Is that the Will Smith one?
Yeah, that was with Will Smith.
Yeah.
Creep me out.
See, it's amazing how when Eve is sort of thinking about so many other different things, all WALL-E can think about is being with her and holding hands with her.
Yeah, he's the driving force behind the whole film. Is all he wants to do is hold Eve's hand throughout the entire film. And just like in Nemo, where we build up to a certain point, like in Nemo, near the beginning of the film, Nemo says to his dad, "I hate you." And so we have to go through the entire film to resolve that issue up to the very end of Nemo, when Nemo apologizes to his dad and everything is fine again. I suppose it's the same type of concept in WALL-E, where you have to get to the conclusion by going through the entire movie. All WALL-E wants to do is hold Eve's hand, and you finally do get to see that at the very end of the film, but You have to wait an entire hour and a half to see that, but it's a journey all in itself for both the characters and the audience.
That's a good comparison, actually, when I think about that.
Yeah, I guess it pertains to Andrew Stanton's unique style of directing. I'm sure there's other films that have the same basic concept, but Stanton's films really seem to stand out in that particular way, as far as Pixar films go, anyway.
It's funny how she was trying to send him back to Earth anyway, and then the second he does get, you know, sent back, she's like, no. I remember reading somewhere that the sort of arm pullover head rest type things are based on the ones in Disneyland or Disney World, possibly.
Oh, you mean in that Disney World ride, Journey to Mars, or whatever the name of it is?
I'm not sure. I've never been there, but
it might be based on that.
Yeah, they look the kind of same sort of thing, don't they? That sort of roller coaster type.
Yeah, I think so. I love how in animation, you can literally cheat and no one will really know. Well, they'll know, but no one will really care whether or not you cheat, and then it's kind of required in animation. But you're so captivated by the story at times that you don't really pay attention to it. Like, the part where Wally, gets out of the escape pod just in time. To me, it seemed the timing was a little off. It seemed like he would have pulled up anyway, but they skip past that and ignore that fact. For the purpose of the story. And there's another part in Wall-E. Go ahead.
So you carry on.
There's another part in Wall-E, actually, at the very beginning of the film, where Wall-E is watching the Hello Dolly film on TV, and he pushes the record button on his body there to record the song, but he records it when the song is halfway done. But when he goes out of his spaceship a couple minutes later and plays the song again, it starts from the beginning. So technically it's incorrect, but according to the story, it works in that way.
I hadn't noticed that, actually. Really?
Yeah, if you go back to the beginning of the movie, you'll notice.
I'll look out for that next time. I mean, it's also like the fire extinguisher. No fire extinguisher lasts that long, but it doesn't really matter. You don't really...
Yeah.
It's kind of...
Yeah, exactly. You just don't care because you're so captivated by the story. That some technical aspects like that don't really matter.
It's so amazing that Wally, in his own way, finds a way to fly, just like Eve. He will do anything to be with her, I think. And
I know, it's a beautiful way to present it.
That's John Ratzenberger, they're obviously playing John, I guess.
Yeah. The first time he played a character with his own name in it.
So I think that's slightly cool. I mean, if you just see Alto for a few seconds, just sort of sorting out the axiom, doing the things that technically the captain could do. And I like how in the background you can see Eve and Wally dancing. And how the contrast between the two is really, really great there. There's Bernie. Obviously, he has his own little short film, which is very funny. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's very cute. It's directed by Angus MacLean, right?
I'm not sure.
I think it was. His first shot at directing a Pixar feature, yeah. Or a short.
I always thought this was actually the Earth. Seeing this bit, I was so confused. It's as though Eve is determined not only to sort of bring the plant to McCrae and just to you know, fulfill her directive, but also to prove him wrong. As all, you know, as though to say, no, I'm not defective, really, you know, I was wrong in the first place, look.
Hello, I love that shot. Nobody laughed at that, I thought it was hilarious.
I know a lot of people say that, as a film, you know, they might not like it because of the, environmental side of things and the way it criticizes humans for not looking after the planet, but I can't see how that's a bad thing, really. I can't see how a film that says, you know, look after the Earth because it's the only one we've got, I mean, how can that be bad? But some people obviously don't like an environmental message running through the film. But I think Pixar done it quite well in the sense that it doesn't overtake the film at all. It's there, but it's not the key factor of the film. That's the love between Wally and Eve.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of controversy circulating around that fact as to whether or not Andrew Stanton was trying to convey a message, but with the entire environmental theme happening on in the background. But Stanton himself said that that was never his intention. It was just a way to move the story forward, basically, that everyone took it as, or a lot of people took it as an environmental message, but doesn't really bother me either, because, like you said, it's in the background, and the main focus is on Wally and Eve and the love story, and just the other thematic elements involved in the film just help to drive that main story forward.
This is Eve's defining moment, definitely, realizing how much she means to Wally.
I love the score in the back of this particular sequence. It's only a few seconds long, I think it's 30-something seconds, but it is very pretty, and I wish it had been made longer.
I wonder what plant that actually is. What actual species it is.
It looks like a pea plant.
It was a tree, though, right? Because at the very end of the film, you see those
the traditionally
the traditionally animated credits. At the very end of those, you see a large tree that Eve and Wally are observing, and then the camera pans down to the roots of the tree, and the roots
go
into a boot, so it was actually some kind of a oak tree or something.
Oh. I guess it's quite appropriate in a way, isn't it? Because trees are, you know, if anybody ever thinks sort of life givers, and they give us, you know, oxygen and that kind of thing. Everyone thinks of trees, don't they? So that's quite a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. Very symbolic.
That blank stare. This is everything. One thing I don't like is how obvious the A113 joke is in this film.
I know, I didn't like that either. Usually their in-jokes aren't too blatant, but they were in this particular film. Pretty much every in-joke, the piece of planet track is right there,
it's
even though
you see
it really quick, and A113 is right there. John Ratzenberger, you know, the character he plays is John. I kind of wish the in-jokes had been a little more hidden, so we would have had to kind of work to find them. I forgot to mention something that's actually pretty interesting that should have probably been mentioned at the very beginning of this film is the camera work that they did in this film is so different from their other films, and that it's set up more like a camera that you would use for shooting live-action productions. There's some places in this film where the camera gets blurry or it shifts a little bit or bounces. It's very subtle, but you see them sometimes throughout the movie in certain sequences, like one part where Wally is following Eve around Earth, and all the grocery shopping carts chase him all the way down to the door and crash into him. The camera kind of blurs a little bit and gets in and out of focus, and just little things like that involving camera work make this film all the more unique. My mouth was hanging open for like 5 minutes during this sequence. I probably get shocked and everything. It was so unexpected.
He's just so naive, isn't he, Wally? He just has no idea what's going on most of the time.
I know.
He's on top of the situations. He's like, oh, really? Okay, then. Kind of ironic that the humans had to leave Earth because of all the rubbish they've created, and then here we are, and they've created rubbish. I obviously haven't learned the lesson yet.
Hello.
And also the little robotic mice that we see just there.
Oh, the computer mice?
Yeah, the computer mice, yeah. All robots were created for a reason, but I can never think of a reason for them.
Well, they rebooted Eve, I guess, so I guess that was a good reason.
Yeah, that was their purpose.
In one of the deleted scenes in the first Wally DVD, this particular sequence here was actually flipped. It was Eve that was hurt, needed rescuing, and Wally intended to save her. But Anderson decided to change that at the last second because it just wasn't strong enough. Because we already know that Wally loves Eve. But it's Eve that actually needs to realize that Wally does love her, so the entire sequence was switched so that Wally was the one that was hurt, and Eve needed to save him. Then she realized that she really did love Wally, and it made the story stronger in that way.
I remember, I think it was showing one of the adverts, actually, because they didn't nearly complete that deleted scene, didn't they? They got really far into it.
And they did, I think it was...
moment, they swapped it around, but I think wasn't it the other way around? Sort of Wally holding Mo, and then Eve holding Wally, perhaps? I can't remember.
Yeah, that's what we see, Yeah, in the original trailer, that's what we see. We see actually Wally holding on to Mo, so that's where that came from, was the deleted scene. And that particular deleted scene, I think it was almost entirely rendered, so they had to scrap the entire thing and change it around.
It'd be annoying having worked on that scene if you were somebody that spent quite a few hours sort of
doing
that scene and seeing it go out the window, like, great.
You do all this work and then you just throw it in the trash.
Music here as well, once again, is just so...
And Thomas Newman did a wonderful job with the score.
That, like, Mo cleans Wally's hand before shaking hands out, you know. It's kind of depressing, though, isn't it, if you think about it. There's Mo sort of sitting there, and he's already, I guess, completed his directive, because Wally's as clean as he can be. But now he just sits there and does nothing. And it's kind of, you know... How that Wally sort of brought another meaning to all the robots' lives. Instead of just doing what they were told to do, now there's something else out there.
I guess so. That is a good point. I actually kind of like how in this sequence Mo is completely dirty now, but he doesn't even try to put himself. After this, he kind of cares about helping out Wally and Eve, so it shows how Wally affects pretty much everybody on the Axiom.
But you can see Mo just turning there. I never noticed that, actually. He's actually watching the whole thing.
I never noticed that either.
What's going on? So once again, this is a moment where I had to kind of watch it a few times to really understand that Eve wanted to go back home because of Wally's parts and everything. I thought they just wanted to go home because of Earth, really, not because of, you know, looking after Wally or anything, but...
I know, I was the same way. I didn't really understand exactly why she wanted to go back to Earth until later on, or at least until she got there. I went, oh, she wanted to repair him. Should have been obvious, I guess, but I didn't really get it the first time.
Always makes me laugh that. Just chuck him in there, it's fine. It's like their theme tune, isn't it, really? All the robots sort of got something slightly wrong with them. The second they hear, put on the sunny clothes, they know, you know, what is around
somewhere.
So which reject robot's your favorite then, guys?
I'm not sure. There's so many different ones, it's kind of hard to choose.
I think I like the paint bot. I think his name is Van Gogh.
Oh yeah, he's cool. I like that light robot, although you don't see him too often in the film.
The parasol's pretty cool as well.
Oh yeah, I forgot the name of that particular one.
Yeah. It's never seemed quite right to me. I don't really, you know, just sort of smash and then...
Yeah, he should have fallen in the pool. I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
But they just smash him. They should have fallen in the pool. I like the fact that even though most of the humans seem very lazy and just lethargic, they still have that resilience that humans have, particularly the captains. Even though he never really did anything for most of his years in office, he was still very resilient and authoritative when it came to fighting back for what was right and fighting back Otto.
I wonder what the head blowing up things are for, actually.
Maybe it's for if someone accidentally shoots out into space, if one of the doors open, they have some protection so they can breathe. I don't know. Or perhaps it's because when they go into hyperspace, it goes so fast that they need extra oxygen or something.
Oh, that's true. That's probably it, actually. Yeah, I know.
The crowd sequence here, I believe Pixar took a leaf out of Weta's book and used some of their technology to create these huge crowd scenes. And Weta did such sequences as the large crowd scenes in Lord of the Rings and some other films of that caliber.
It is quite interesting because in a way it's the first time we see a big mass of humans actually helping each other and being in direct contact with each other. At the beginning of the film, well, not the beginning, but when we first see Otto and hear him, he has a really, really flat tone to his voice, but as time goes on, he seems to be showing more and more emotion.
Yeah, it's interesting, because pitch changes as the film wears on to a point of desperation, which shows that even he has a personality, even though it's more hidden than the other robots.
Very epic moment there. Is that from 2001 A Space Odyssey? Or am I thinking of a different film?
Yep.
That is, okay, good. That always reminds me of kind of sort of Roman gladiator type.
Oh yeah, I never thought of that before.
People cheering, you know, go on. Oh, that always makes you sad, though. See, now the roles have kind of reversed, really, aren't they? Where Wally was just infatuated with Eve before, and Eve was just doing things and not really caring about Wally. Now, massive things are happening around the two of them, but Eve doesn't really care anymore. Now she's the one focusing on Wally and just not really, not on what's going on around them.
Yeah, it's a nice arc of Eve's character. She goes from completely disregarding Wally as another piece of junk on Earth to really caring about him at the very end of the film.
It's hard to think that Hal's probably just been sitting there the entire time waiting
for hours.
Quite strange to return back to the to Wally's home in a way, isn't it, really? Sort of thinking about it. It seems like such a long time ago that we were sort of in this situation.
Yeah, I agree. You're on the Axiom for so long that it just seems like almost unnatural to come back to Earth. I think I just didn't mention that it was actually kind of relieving to come back to Earth at a point, because when you're on the Axiom, everything is so clean and precise, and there's not a smidgen of dirt anywhere. And when you come back to Earth, it's more homely and more comfortable, really. I actually half wish at the end of this film that Wally had just remained static the way he was and not returned to
his hours, though.
I know. But I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. I kind of wish that it just ended like that, where he was just like a normal Wally robot all over again and he never returned to his personality. And it would have been sad, but I don't know. For some reason, I thought it would have made the movie a little bit stronger for some reason.
I agree that it would definitely make the point of what he's been through and everything more, you know, definitely more strong. I can see why they didn't go with it, because it's meant to be, I guess, a kids' film as well. You know?
Yeah, they can't do that in front of the kids.
They can't do that kind of thing. They should do, like, an adult version of Wally.
They should.
But at the same time, yeah, no, I see what you mean, definitely. There would be so much more power in Wally not remembering, because it's kind of, you know, in a way it was all his fault that he lost his memory. And it would be sort of like saying that sort of following your commands, not thinking for yourself, has such a bad effect, and it would be really kind of making that point.
Right. It would have been a very depressing ending, but it would have been, in my opinion, it would have been a little stronger.
Then also the ending credits also, I don't know what they would have done with them if Wally had forgotten, really, because a sort of happy, cheerful ending credits would just seem harsh, wouldn't it? Maybe like, oh well,
yeah,
it would. No, he's gone.
Yeah.
It only takes a moment. Maybe that's what that's referring to, really, in a way. They've used the song and sort of, it only takes a moment, that spark, to go between them.
Yeah, probably.
I love how shocked he is. Wait, you're holding my hand? Really? I always think they cut off a bit too... Oh, no. It always feels as though it cuts away to the video too quickly, though. To me, I always think it's gone to a next scene or something.
I agree. It is a bit of a quick cut. Yeah. I also thought the ending was a little bit too... little too quick. It's like, you know, okay, Wally's back, everything's fine, let's get to the ending as quick as we can. I don't know, it just seemed like it went a little too fast for me. I guess they did it sort of a time with the song in the background, but still, it felt a little fast.
I wonder why the atmosphere did clean up, though. I wonder how, because obviously life wasn't sustainable on Earth when the humans left, so something must have changed that. Maybe the effort of Wally was enough.
Maybe. Yeah, that's true, because the plants did kind of spread a little too... pretty quickly, didn't they? Because there wasn't a plant in sight, you know, except for the one Wally found at the beginning of the film. And then we returned to Earth just a few hours later. There's plants everywhere, so...
Yeah. I think the sequence is kind of influenced by things like cave paintings and then Egyptian hieroglyphs and things like that, and sort of actually evolves with... sort of the history of, you know, human paintings, like, sort of along with it?
Yeah, it does. It's almost showing the chronology of art, as it were, from cave paintings to, like you said, hieroglyphs, and then it goes all the way up to traditional animation, and then to graphic images or pixel images, which is where we're at now. So it shows the history of art as well as the history of this particular film.
And isn't that Squirt and the other turtles from Finding Nemo, I guess?
I think so. That's what I've heard. I love this animation here. I wish Pixar would do more of this.
The really traditional sort of... Because they're so good at it, aren't they? They're really amazing.
I know. They should open up a 2D unit or something adjacent to their studio.
And it's lovely to see the robots and the humans truly working together.
Yeah, it is.
And that always reminds me of Ratatouille, actually. I have to say, the kind of the style of it.
Oh, yeah, it's similar.
I like also how the axiom's still there. It's a reminder of their past. It's kind of like a warning in a way, isn't it? Sort of saying, you know, that's what happened before. And let's not get to that point again.
It is, yeah. That's an interesting way to look at it. I agree with you. It kind of reminds me of A Bug's Life, actually, because in the background there you see the axiom, and it's been over, plants have grown around the axiom, and the ship itself has just been kind of abandoned. And it reminds me of a part in A Bug's Life, where at the very end of the film, the bird that they built beforehand crashed, and afterwards it just left it there and let plants grow around it. Almost
really?
As a reminder. Yeah, do you remember that? It reminds me of that, but the stories are completely different, but I don't know, it just reminds me of that thematically.
There's something about this song. Not only is it an amazing song, but it definitely is an end credit song.
It is.
You know what I mean? Like sometimes songs, they really suit, you know, the reflection of the film in a way, and it's sort of...
Yeah, I know what you mean. I always kind of hoped that they would make these pixel images and make them into a computer game or something, because it looks like a Nintendo game that you'd like to play, and make a whole story out of it with these characters in the end credits.
I love the idea of Wally and Eve's story kind of being told for generations and generations to come in a way. It's kind of that sort of historical... It has such importance, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning also that Wally was just generally received so well, wasn't it? I mean, almost every review is positive. You know, it made lots of money as well, always a good thing. And for it to get 6 Oscar nominations, I think it was the highest number of Oscar nominations a Pixar film has had so far.
I think so, yeah. It was very successful at the box office when it was first released, and continues to be successful in DVD sales, I believe. And I love how Pixar takes risks with their films. Most animation studios, such as DreamWorks and some other films, they just play off of the original stories that have been recycled over and over again. And I know there are only about 7 stories that could be told, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like most films just take the general route, but Pixar takes the road less traveled and just does daring things. It creates movies like WALL-E, you know, that are mostly pantomime and touch on subjects that most people wouldn't dare to touch on. But they go to show that even a film as daring as this can be very highly successful.
I know some people say they would like to see a sequel, perhaps, but I don't know. In a way, although we could see how humans develop and how they make Earth their own again, I'm not sure about whether it would be worth going back to it.
I don't know. With most Pixar films, I just like it ending as it is, and they're so renowned for their originality in films that I just kind of prefer it. That none of their films have a sequel. Although when they do have a sequel, they're very successful, but I prefer that most of them don't have a sequel.
Yeah.
Including WALL-E. I kind of thought of it as, if a film has the end at the end of it, then a sequel shouldn't be made. And
yeah.
If it doesn't, then it can't have a sequel. But you know, even then, you know, with WALL-E, that didn't say the end, the conclusion of the film, but I wouldn't want to see a sequel anyway. Because the ending is so perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining us in this commentary. This is Mitch.
This is Lisica.
And this is Quick Next to Me.
And this commentary was done by members of Pixar Planet. Thank you very much for listening in.